Hi, I'm Scott Jennings. I'm director of the Electronic Frontiers Forums track at DragonCon, and this is the self-publishing panel, or at least I hope it is. And so if we could start with Jenny, and if you could tell me how you're involved in self-publishing and what you're doing, what your projects are, let us feel your pain.
It's going to take more than an hour. My name is Jenny Breeden, and I do the webcomic The Devil's Panties. It's been up online since 2001, and then I've been self-employed. I quit my day job about 2 years ago, and I've been printing books on my own and selling them at conventions, and I got picked up by Silent Devil 2 years ago and got into comic shops, and then last year I got picked up by Arkea, and then... that book isn't out yet, and that was a year ago, so now I'm self-publishing. Now I'm learning all of the wonders of a tax ID and the federal ID and the business ID, and those are fun. The Futurama episode of the bureaucracy, yeah, they weren't exaggerating. So it's a learning experience.
Me?
Okay.
I'm Scott Sigler. I am a fiction author, and 3 years ago started giving away all my books as podcasts, unabridged podcast. Deliver about 30, 45 minutes a week, and that's been going on for about 3 years and developed enough of a following that when I put out a book that wasn't self-published, it was a very small Canadian publisher called Dragon Moon Press. The book was called Ancestor, and when I released that, there was a big old rush for it on Amazon, and it hit number 7 overall on Amazon. Was number 1 in horror, number 1 in sci-fi, and the only fiction book that outsold it was Harry Potter. So,
nice.
For like the week, you know, nothing gigantic, but it was enough for people in New York to crap themselves and go, "Holy cow, there's someone out there that can do this, and we can't do that 99% of the time." And then that led to a publishing deal with Crown. And this just infected one of the books I already gave away as a podcast and as a full PDF, and they put it out as a hardcover, and it's done pretty well so far, and the sequel will be out in December. It did well enough that they want to hurry up and get the next book out to market, so good times.
Nice. I'm Kimmy Alexander. I run a podcast called Tail Chasing. It's T-A-L, not T-I-L, T-A-I-L. And Tail Chasing. Yeah. And it's for urban fantasy readers and writers. I'm also working on a podcast novel that I'm going to podcast while I write because I'm crazy. So that's my big tie to self-publishing. I'm also working with a very small company who is helping publish some small press books, BDSM type. So,
cool.
And we went through Lulu for that. So,
all right. Can you talk some about the services that are out there? I know that I've heard of Lulu before. I don't know what the others are, but can you talk about any of the services that you've used for self-publishing?
I've used Lulu. There's when you're first starting out, there's a couple of smaller print places that you don't have to print up 3,000 books. You can print out, you know, 1 or 200. Lulu is one of the services that you can print out one book. And it's nice because you upload the book onto their website, and then you send your friends and your family and your mom over to it, and they buy it, and Lulu will print the book, ship it to them, and give you the $3 or $4 that you wanted for the money from that. The back and forth of that is that you get $4 for printing it on Lulu, but if you printed it yourself, you know, 3,000 books, then you get $19 from the final cut. But you have to do everything yourself, so there's a back and forth. I've used Dreamweaver Press, okay. I'm trying to use Quebecor at the moment because I'm right now getting into 2,000, 3,000 book print runs, so Quebecor is a very good one. I'm trying to think of any other small print places. I'm sorry? Oh, I have no idea. Sure. Oh. Okay. No, there's Quebecor, and there's They've got another. It's French. There's another word for them. And then there's a. Sorry, my brain's not working today, so I'll have to check my emails.
The only one we've used is Lulu, but we did a whole bunch of research on the net because we had to try and get a print of a book out like immediately. We were going to try and sell it on Friday, and Lulu came through seriously. They were incredible. Sadly, I don't have the URL of them, but I'm sure if you look on the net, under
Lulu.com.
Well, for this other one I found, because they're in Canada, and they were the only other people who were really willing to work with us. When I called them, I got like the manager of production on the phone.
Did you try Book Surge by chance?
I'm not sure. But I was just going to say, you know, just look on the net for them. And Canada is, you know, the one in Canada is really good.
And Book Surge, which I haven't used, Book Surge is through Amazon. That's their self-publishing imprint. And, of course, being through Amazon, they have this massive array of services and choices. I don't think the prices are really that great, but that's just another one definitely to look into.
Okay. You may have mentioned this before, but I just wanted to cover it again. When did you take that first step, and how long ago was it? And when you first stepped off and first had something self-published out there, other than internet, when you had something in a print-like material?
I had a couple of steps. Because there's definitely putting something in print. There's printing it off, because I'm printing artwork, and so printing off on my computer and then folding it over and stapling it in the middle, and you start learning what a bleed is and what active area is, and okay, I really can't draw it to the line because my printer can't grab it, and so you start learning your own printing. When you print it off on your computer, you can figure out, wow, this takes a lot of ink. If I want to print this up myself off of my computer, then you know, I'm going to have to adjust some of these pages. And then I think I went to Lulu for the big graphic novels. And then starting off on my own, quitting my day job, I realized that to have enough time to make enough merchandise, to make enough money, to be able to quit my day job, I was going to have to quit my day job so I had enough time to make the money. And that was 2 years ago. For print.
I haven't actually had anything published in print. Part of the reason I wanted to come be on the panel is because I'm finding, like Scott, using podcasting is really a good way. I mean, even if I never actually have my novel come out traditionally in print, this is really fulfilling my self-gratification instant thing, because I get to write it and put it out there and I get immediate feedback.
And there's also, you know, from the digital printing perspective, Ancestor was done through Book Surge, but through the publisher, so they had an initial run of like 2,000 copies. But you know, I agree with Kimmy. It's most of the stuff I'm not printing myself that I'll be putting out, because if I give it away as a podcast or as a free PDF, all of that's more of a viral replication approach than the single print book. You can buy the book, pass it on to him, but if you get the free PDF and email it to 5 people, now there's 6 copies of that out there self-replicating and spreading around. So, you know, by all means, pursue putting things out in print if you've got the customer base that's going to buy those, so that you don't spend a lot of money and have several boxes in your garage. But art, audio, fiction, in any number of formats now, you can self-publish online, and you can find out what's good and what's not good from audience reaction.
Yeah, I've definitely found that it makes, in this day and age, the businessmen, it makes them kind of their head explode when you say, well, you give it away, you know, you put it online and you give it away. I mean, all of the controversy online about downloading music and downloading movies and all this stuff, it's advertising, it's free advertising. And with print and with publication, at least coming from the comic book aspect of it, going through Diamond, Diamond has a thing where before they distribute your book, you have to sell the book that isn't out yet. You have to sell a certain number of the books before they'll carry it. You have to serve the cake before you bake it. And so putting it out online and giving it away, having the downloads, you're creating a fan base. That way, when you do create a product, even if it's not the book, even if you start making, I make slap bracelets and dog tags and things that don't have anything to do with the book, but it's a way for fans to get to support and to get some sort of little piece of it. But yeah, I have found it's a whole new marketing scheme as far as giving the thing away and then you're creating the fans before you create the product.
I had a really hard time getting my head around not going traditional, because I mean that's what everybody talks about when they used to talk about is, you know, you need to, what if you put it up online and someone, you know, copies it and they're going to take your stuff and, you know, and you can't give it away free because then you're never going to get paid for it. And I spent all my time since, you know, high school joining, you know, Romance Writers of America or whatever, you know, to learn about not only writing but getting published. And like that's like the big thing is you get traditionally published. You have to find an agent and you have to find a, you know, a publisher and how hard this is and if you do that, you know, it's gonna be really difficult because, you know, the slush pile is huge and you might not even get there. But now that, you know, you can do it this way, you're pretty much guaranteed.
And it's really something to keep in mind, anybody who is an aspiring writer or artist, because this is the way the business is going. Within the next 3 to 5 years, if you are insisting on getting paid for every word you write and putting, you know, I've got a book, come buy my book and then you can find out if I'm good or not, no one's going to pay any attention to you, because there are people, there are mid-level and professional authors who are giving everything away. And it also comes down to the attention span and the available time that people have, which they don't have. And if your stuff is up online, it's for free. I'm checking out the Devil's Panties right now, and I just found out about this 5 minutes ago. So since everything's right here, I can flip through this and see what I like, what I don't like. Yeah, I think I would like to buy that book, or God, I'd like to get some dog tags. You
know, yeah, I want dog tags.
I've also got hand sanitizer for the conventions. Totally. Sweet. Oh, and I've got some Minin kilts with leaf blower playing cards.
Woohoo!
Well, and the whole thing about publication. Oh, I'm doing it tonight at midnight at the leaf blower down the Marriott. And so the whole thing with publication. My dream, my goal before I died, I wanted to have my comic book in a comic book store on the shelf in a store that I wasn't working in. That was my goal. A store that I had never been into. I wanted, and sure enough, I've got my comic book is in a store in Australia and Germany, and it's everywhere. I have never seen a single red cent from any of these comic books in all these stores. So the whole prestige of being published and distributed, and I'm in comic book stores, and I'm still, you know, begging fans for pizza, you know, money for pizza and orange juice. So the whole, there's definitely that whole aspiration of getting picked up by a publisher. But if your goal is to do this as a day job, to quit your day job and be able to do this 24 hours, there are alternatives. Putting it on, there's a girl that is put a bunch of work at my table that is, she's got her book on a memory disc. And it's a really awesome memory disc with a little leather holder. And she's selling it for $25, and it's all of the stuff, and it's completely all profit.
In the panel that I was just on, they were talking about how fans will pay for, you know, for the stuff that you put out for free. They want to help, they want to donate, they want to show support, and you know, you get it out there and you get fans, and they want. You probably end up getting more money than you would get otherwise, because there's no limit on how much they can give you. It's a donation, so you could, you know, say you got a guy who, you know, really likes your work or thinks you're pretty or something. You know, he's not going to give you $10 for it. He's going to give you $150. Woohoo!
Yeah, actually,
score.
Because it's definitely if you give it away, the fans of web, at least for web comics and for the internet, that you put your effort into it. If you go ahead and update it every single day, and they get invested into it, and for your of putting it up as you write it, that's the incentive of for you to keep writing it. Because
exactly.
If you stop, they come find you. And there's definitely I read the stuff online and I get so invested and it's, you know, it's this, you need your fix, you just gotta, and so I get incredibly, you know, I'll do anything for, if this person needs, there's a lot of writers and artists out there that their house will burn down or they'll need something for, you know, their car will break down. Randy Mulholland had, okay, guys, if you want me to check my spelling, then pay me enough for a year's salary. He got it in a month. They were just like, oh, okay. He was kidding at the time. But they just threw money at him. It's warm, fuzzy little community.
Well, it's not just warm, fuzzy. It's when you give the stuff away, the people who come back to you every day, every week, every month, they have an attachment to your work. They really like your work. And I'm sure anybody who's at Dragon Con probably knows what it is to be obsessed with a TV show or a comic book or something where you've got to have everything that comes out.
Right.
And there's this sense of gift or reward to a reader. You're like, well, I tried this out for free and I just love it, and the free stuff keeps coming. That's kind of the warm fuzzy. It's, they're giving their money because they know exactly what they're getting, and they're perfectly willing to put down their money to continue getting the stuff that exactly perfectly makes them happy. So you're really achieving a connection with the audience by self-publishing in some kind of digital format, and people just love you when they don't have to risk their money to find out if they like it or not.
Speaking of what you said, I have wanted to be a writer since I was probably 14, 15. I'm 36. So I had so much opportunity between then and now to finish a book. I have never written more in my entire life than I have since I know that if I... And I'm really scared, actually, to put up... I put up a teaser of my first chapter, so it is coming. But I'm terrified of putting up my first chapter knowing that I have to now. And I can't spend a month doing it. You know, they're only going to wait so long before they come knocking on my door, you know? And it's really awesome incentive to just get it done.
It's amazing what you come up with, too.
Yeah.
Now, on the flip side of this, though, because on one hand, oh, people will love you and give you money, a certain percentage. I don't know what it is for the print books, for the web comics, and I compared notes at one of the conventions. I think the guy did blankets. We compared notes on what our hit count was, what our unique visitor count was, and how many people actually bought something. And I get about a sale a day on my webcomic, and I get 20,000 people a day reading it. Mm-hmm. So take that into account. It's going to take you a couple of years to build up the readers and build up, you know, that you work on the stuff and you give it away. There are people who appreciate it. But for the majority of the internet, I mean, I go online and I kind of expect it to be free as well. And so I listen to an internet radio every single day, and I donated $10 once. I need to go donate some more. And so there is a certain percentage of actual sales. It's 1 in 10 or 20,000 people that I found. I don't know if that's true for the other side.
Patio books, if we're going to talk about podcasting, you know, patio books, you know, is... Scott can probably tell you more about patio books than I can. Scott, take it away.
Patiobooks.com, P-O-D-I-O books.com. Has become the aggregator, the focal point for people who are giving away their fiction as audiobooks in podcast format. And everything there is free. It's somewhat ad supported, but not very much. And the podcasts themselves are free, and you can donate to the author if you want to. But what's more important, if you're an aspiring author, is that they have a full FAQ section there that will tell you what you need to do, which is huge, because it's very, if you don't know this stuff to start with, there's a bit of a learning curve to get it figuring out. So they'll walk you through it, and they've got 40,000 people signed up on the site downloading everything that comes out because it's free. And I mean, where else in the world are you going to instantly get 40,000 people who know how to get your book, are looking for new stuff to listen to, and give you a chance to have immediate audience exposure
and know what a podcast is and how to listen to it? And you know, you're going to get new people learning about podcasting, but it is an advantage to have people who understand that, you know, this is how they get it and this is how they can listen to it and things like that. I say that because it's a learning curve with my mother as I'm trying to teach her how to get my stuff. So
I was in line at Kinko's and I was doing my business cards, and the lady in front of me turned around. Oh, what's that? Oh, it's my webcomic. What's a webcomic? Oh.
Well, you went into the resources on Potiobooks. Can you recommend some other resources for getting into the business? And that includes the business side, the legal side, because if you're self-publishing, you may have to sort of become your own business and learn a lot of things that you never thought you'd have to do in order to write. So maybe to do with the if you're printing, the mechanics of the printing and how that works, and also the legal and business side, maybe the accounting side.
I've been learning a bunch of stuff. For being on this panel so many years, I'm just now learning about actual, like, the tax and the lawyer and the and all of that side of it, which if the state ever asks, I'm starting my business on the 1st. Don't tell them that I started it in 2001. As far as the legal side, I've been doing it since 2001, and I've just now gotten a name of a good attorney and a good tax guy. And the tax guy's walking me through all of the federal ID and the tax license and stuff. And the attorney lady is walking me through copyright and trademark. And I think that she told me that it's, or the tax guy told me that it's different for every state. And that he pointed out that Georgia is the best place, Atlanta is the best place to do copyright and trademark, because Coke is here. And they make damn sure that that the trademark laws are very strict. But I've just now, and that was actually for the past 3 years, I've been asking around about a good tax guy, because it depends on your field. Find a tax guy who has worked with other writers or other artists, because definitely webcomics and comic books have a lot of different loopholes and niches and details that a tax specialist for, say, Quickie Mart would have very different skills. The biggest learning experience I had legally is having people sign contracts, because life is long and shit happens. And it doesn't matter if they're your best friend or your sister or your relative or your boyfriend. Stuff happens. And if you're using their actual name and you're saying, you know, this is them, they can do very bad things to you. The very least being, I'm sorry, you can't use any of that work that you've done in the past 3 years because I don't like you anymore. Yeah, that sucks a lot. And so if you're change names for, if you're doing autobiographical stuff, or if you're going basing anybody on a somebody you know, do that whole none of this is based on anybody, even if you think it is, this song is not about you, type little detail. And there's stuff, and I had my mom's gotten me on this thing about writing up release forms. And she keeps, one of the most surreal moments of my life was going up to my boyfriend going, baby, I love you. Could you sign this? I want you to sign away, you know, I want the ability to be able to use you for anything and everything, and you get no say in it. I love you. And sure enough, my mom still says, so you got all the family members to sign that too, right? You got everybody at that knitting group that you did that cartoon about. You got all them to sign it, right? Well, no, not really. But yeah, the legal side of it is definitely worth kind of looking into.
I have
got nothing
story.
This is an incredibly weak part of my repertoire of things that I'm generally weak at, so it's like way down there. You know, I have a limited liability corporation thingy filed, and I originally started that back in Michigan for some just general marketing consulting work I was doing. Much more expensive to do business in California, I'll tell you that. It's $25 in Michigan, it's $800 in California, which is a real bite in my ass. So I know extremely little about this. I just kind of follow the advice that I'm given by people who know more, and they say trying to find some kind of separation between your personal life and the work is a good idea if you're going to be pursuing this with any level of intensity. Largely, that's for lawsuit protection and other things, which is mostly out of the standard business world where you're doing a lot of business with other people. What we do, I don't know it's really going to come into play that often, but still, that's one thing to consider. Create a separate bank account under that limited liability corporation name, And that way you've completely separated the finances of your business from your personal finances, which can benefit you down the road if you go bankrupt and can't pay somebody because you decided to actually print 2,000 copies of your book and they're sitting in your garage and you can't pay for them. That's also very, your tax person will love you for that too, because you get a simple program like QuickBooks, track all of your business expenses in QuickBooks, and then at the end of the year when you go to your tax guy, you just email them the 2008 tax report from the software, and you're 9 times out of 10 you're done. Then they just go through, ask you a couple questions. So those kind of things, getting those in ahead of time can save you a lot of trouble. So the biggest things are, ask about LLCs in your state, see if that's something that you think is affordable. Go ahead and make a separate bank account for your business just so it's completely separate, and that will save you some headaches down the road.
And QuickBooks.
Yeah,
QuickBooks is definitely something to start learning. I have to do that. I haven't done that yet. Quicken and QuickBooks is definitely something.
At the risk of being stoned, I've used Microsoft Money as well.
I'm sure that's fine. Yeah.
I've used WordPerfect. I mean, just give me a grid and I'll fill it in. Okay.
Question. Just throw something out for you all. If you ever plan on your stuff ever being optioned for television and film, you will have to sign a contract with whoever's producing and distributing the television and film, saying that you own everything that is in your content. So if that isn't a motivation for you to make sure you got all your releases, there is none. Because you're going to have to show them the releases. And it's a deal killer. They'll drop you like a rock.
So this one time, I had a thought when you were talking about that, but I got an email from somebody, I got a phone call from a guy in LA, and he was like, we want to do the Devil's Panties Oxygen live action TV show. We want to have, you know, the wacky life of the cartoonist TV show on Oxygen, and we want to produce this. And I was like, wow, that's really weird. I'd like to do a cartoon, but I don't really know how I feel. And he said, oh, yeah, we can do a cartoon, too. That'll be fine. And I said, I don't know if I'm comfortable with writing when he sent me the contract. If you get a contract from anybody, be it Marvel or DC or whoever the equivalent is in the print or in the novel world, whatever contract you get, spend the $300, go to an attorney and have them look over it. It doesn't matter if this, you know, I've had the couple of publishers I've had are the nicest guys in the world. I've been totally screwed by them, no fault of their own. Having somebody look over the contract. This company says, we want you to sign this contract, giving us the media rights. So if there's ever a movie or a TV show, then we can do that. And I had just a friend look over it, and he was like, yeah, if they make a movie, you get $10,000. Do you know how much that sucks? Any lawyer that ever looked at that laughed their ass off. So I went back to the guys, and I said, I'm not really comfortable with writing for a live-action TV show. I don't really know if I can do that. And they said, oh, no, we'll have somebody else write it. Wait a minute. You're going to have somebody else write my autobiographical comic strip? This doesn't seem right. These guys were shady as all get out. Even though they came to me and said, oh, we're going to do a movie, and then they weren't. No, they were going around to all the webcomic people, all of the small people, and having them sign contracts to see if they could lock in as many little tiny people as they could before they got big, and so then they would have that contract. So if you ever did get big, then they'd have everything. You'd have absolutely nothing.
Lawyers are a good idea. Agents are a good idea. Of course, you got to be careful because you can spend through the roof on a lawyer immediately. But I've had similar instances, and yeah, like the lady I signed the contract with the small Canadian publisher was great. We were on Skype, and I am every day, and we were chatting. Everything was fun. Then my book came out, and it was time to work on the next book, and she got bought out by somebody. And the person who bought her out was not a nice person that I was on Skype and I am with every day. And they literally email, hey, we got somebody who's interested in the movie rights to Ancestor. We're going to send you something. Can you sign it? Like, send it. And I read it. And they would have gotten 50% of the movie. You know, they would own 50% of whatever normally is paid to the author instead of the normal 20% for that's usually split between the print and the movie rights people. Then they would have taken all the rights to all other forms of reproduction. So if they make a video game, comic book, any sequel, they basically owned all of that stuff. And it was a little simple one-page PDF that they just said, send this because we got a guy who's interested in the movie, and as soon as you sign this, we can get cracking on it. Now, if you're a self-published person and you're busting your ass at this stuff, that sounds pretty exciting. You have to read every contract. You have to get other people to read it. And you, if that stuff starts to happen to you, borrow money from your brother, whatever. Get a lawyer. Hmm. Yes, sir?
I had a question regarding that. How much pressure have you guys been under to like join like the WGA, Writers Guild of America? Because all this stuff is the reason why they went on strike.
I'm not at that level yet, I don't think. The WGA doesn't give a crap about you if you are an independent producer. They don't care. They are making so much money from the people who actually do the work right now that they could care less. And if you when you get into it and you start to produce content at the level, they'll find you and they'll say, you know, you need to come join up with us.
There's a guy in with the watch, the glasses.
I was wondering, have any of you had any experience dealing with mature literature, and by that I guess I mean naughty bits, and does it affect your ability to get a publisher, retain a publisher, or anything like that?
I guess I'm the only one who's done that, but it...
She's wearing the devil's panties, for Christ's sake.
No, those are for sale downstairs.
I'll be back for that. But we did that all through Lulu, so, you know, we didn't have to worry about anybody, you know, like a publisher or anything like that, so.
And it hasn't come into play with me, so.
There's definitely some of the websites that I've signed, when I was signing on to Keenspot, they had that little mark, that little box that you're supposed to check if it was for mature audiences. Lulu has, you're supposed to rate it, whether it's for all ages, mature audiences, 18 and over, you know, for teens, and then there's that 18 and over. And I remember when I was signing into to Keenspot in 2003 or 2002, I went up to my dad and I said, hey, do you think this is mature? And he looked at me and he said, if you have to ask that question, then you already know the answer.
I hate when dads say crap like that.
I was like, well, okay, so what's the answer? So it's, and especially in the day and age of the internet, and I worked at a comic book store that we rented out anime and hentai and yaoi, and trying to say, okay, moms and dads from suburbia, just because it's a cartoon doesn't mean it's for just for children. It's safe for children. And I have 14-year-olds, and I've got an autobiographical strip, so I cuss. And I have, I think I've had like 2 nipple shots in 2,000 comic strips. I don't necessarily censor myself. I do, my boyfriend won't let me do anything that's too naughty because he's in it. And whenever I'm like, oh honey, that was hilarious, can I do a cartoon about that? He says, no, your mom reads this, and my sister reads this, and my friends read this. You can't. So it's only as naughty as my boyfriend will let me make it. But I've had 14-year-old, 15-year-old girls come up to me and say that they read the comic strip, and I'm like, oh God, stop, don't. And they're like, oh no, my mom got me into it. I'm like, and it makes me nervous as far as if, because I have, I think in one of the books, you know, I have, it's all in humor. I mean, nobody's, nothing's really, okay, I can't say violent because I did go after that guy with the hatchet because he called me a sweetie pie. So I can't really say it's not violent. But yeah, I think on the internet, we do our own censorship, that I don't want the angry parent to come after me, so I try to censor myself. I try to tell the 15-year-olds that they can't read anymore. There was a girl at one convention who came up to me, and she's 14, and she wanted to buy one of my books. I have 2 books that are only in print, that all the cartoons are only in the books. that's the way that the people who read online for free, I lure them in to give me money. And one of them is the Pirate Adventures, where they go to conventions. This is still biographical. These two guys who dress as pirates, they go to conventions and get drunk and laid. I have no control over what's in this book. This is all Bluebeard can't really keep it in his pants. And so this 14-year-old girl wanted to buy the book, and I said, no. So as far as the publishers and the printers, they're not really concerned, but I'm a little bit more concerned about, you know, I really don't want another Seduction of the Innocent. You know, all they have to do is find out about the book Preacher, and they're going to start burning comics again. It's only a matter of time before somebody gets upset about all the free stuff on the internet that's not child friendly. And so I'm trying to just keep an eye on my own stuff.
Juan, I have a question for you guys then, since you guys have stuff that's published. My book that I'm getting ready to do is going to have mature themes in it. So what do you recommend? Do I just put like a little disclaimer?
You have to, especially for the audio stuff, you've got to get that right up in front. I do it in a kind of comedic way where the intro,
yeah, I've heard yours. Okay.
The intro to my podcast, gosh, I can't remember what it says now, but it's not nice.
I only remember the last part of it.
It contains mature language, adult situations, and lots of violence. So if you're easily offended, turn it off now. Pussy! So I'm clearly telling you what's in it and making fun of you if you would turn it off. Therefore, you won't turn it off. So I've bullied you into listening to my stuff, even if it offends you. It's kind of the way it goes. So you got to get this. A friend of mine, a podcaster who's having some success and has a book coming out in stores in 2009, Seth Harwood, just ran into this situation. He has a podcast called Crime Wave, CRIMEWAV.com, where he does free audiobooks of crime stories. And people have listened to his Jack Palm series, which is this classic, you know, two-fisted guy in San Francisco driving a Mustang and shooting guns. And, you know, it's awesome. It's awesome T.J. Hooker type stuff. And his opening story in his Crime Wave podcast is a little bit of monkey bestiality in it. So totally caught his listenership completely off guard. And you know, this was a story by a real name author in the space, so he didn't think anything of it. Just pissed his audience off really bad, a couple people really bad. So you've got to get your warnings up front. And if they continue to read after you've warned them, then that's not your problem.
Yeah, I mean,
there was no disclaimer at all.
There's just, yeah, he caught him off guard.
Disclaimer on his own stuff.
Apparently Seth rolls with monkeys in a way that I'm not familiar with. Which is fine.
No, I put my title as The Devil's Panties. One, because that'll weed out anybody who'd possibly be offended by Jesus and the devil smoking pot in the park. And two, that actually lures people in. When I jump up and down and say it's not satanic porn, I get a whole lot of people coming to read it. So it's an amazing thing that happens if you say, disclaimer, don't read this, you'll be offended, it has so much naughtiness in it, 14-year-olds are not allowed to read this. Guess how many sales I'm going to make to 14-year-olds.
The parental advisory sticker is still the best marketing tool ever invented.
Yeah. Oh, I have a book. My pirate book is, the title is Con Artists, Holy Shit Fucking Pirates. And I take hot pink pieces of paper and I cover up the shit and fuck with just maybe the first little word, the first couple of letters peeking out. And so you still know what it says. And I have a bunch of people say, oh my God, this convention made you censor that? I'm like, no, that's advertising. As soon as people see it's censored, they go, oh my God, it's censored? It's naughty? It must be good.
Okay, Scott, you briefly mentioned having an agent. That's a little bit beyond self-publishing, but can you tell me more about in the business what the agent does for you and how that works?
Yeah, if
it
you're
has to do with monkeys.
No, no. But I'll put that on the next writer. You know, we'll see how that goes. if you're self-publishing either in print or online and you don't have an agent, don't worry about it. Don't go after one. Don't hunt for one. When you'll sort of know when it's time. I mean, okay, it's long since time for her. I was just checking out her web stats, which she has put right on devilspanties.com. Like, oh my God, a lot of people read this thing. It's insane. So when you start to get a lot of traffic and you're selling stuff, that's when it's time to go out and look for an agent. no cover letter to an agent should ever say, I just got into writing and this is my first attempt and I want to get an agent to represent me. Because they get a million of those a day. By the time you get to writing cover letters to an agent, they need to say, I've got 250,000 unique downloads per month. On peak days, it's 16,000, and I moved 80 grand worth of merchandise last year just based on my comic strip. Do you want to talk? Yeah, then you're going to get your calls returned, definitely. So what an agent does for you is if you are, other people want to buy your stuff and put it out in different formats. It's the agent's job to look at those contracts and make sure that you aren't getting screwed by the nice little old lady who runs her independent publishing company. Because everyone is out to screw you. If there's one thing you guys write down in your little books right now, or our recording, write this down in all caps. Everyone is out to screw you. And it's okay because they don't think they're screwing you. They think they're getting the best deal. It's called getting the best deal that you can. Everyone is out to get your money as a content creator because they're probably not capable of creating their own content, which will make their own money. That's why they're trying to go take other people's stuff. I mean, that's survival of the fittest. That's just the way it works. If you can't protect your crap, somebody's going to come and take it from you. So what an agent does for you is when you get to the level where people are starting to call you and say, I'd like to put your show on the Oxygen channel. You know, you're starting to get that kind of interest. An agent primarily knows what's going on in the business, knows what's standard, knows that giving up 15% of what you make is industry standard and it's just the way it goes and you got to pay that price. They know these things so that you're primarily focused on creating content or on marketing your content with little pink pieces of paper on your books that make people buy more. If you have to go in and start looking up these contracts and looking up these clauses and trying to find out what industry standard is, your creative career will go right in the crapper because you just don't have time. Agents there to make sure you're protected, make sure that you've got more long-term rights that you know you're going to make money off these things for the rest of your, not only your life, but your life plus 75 years for your family down the road if you are even moderately successful. So, big fan of agents. Don't worry about it until people start emailing you and we'd like to do this with X. That's when you go, oh, you know, and you put that in your letter to the agent too. Say, I've got the Oxygen Channel wants to make a show. Can I get a meeting with you? Yes, you will get a meeting immediately and they will sit down and start talking to you.
Do you pay an agent or?
Agents, a real agent makes commission. Okay? So, part of the agent's job is supposed to be get out there and sell your stuff. So they are like a used car salesman. They have to go out and pimp to get a sale, therefore they collect their 15%. A lot of times what will happen is you'll spend 7-8 years working on this stuff, you'll develop the popularity, you'll already have the money or the offers, an agent collects 15% of the money you get in order to make sure that your rights are fully protected. But any agent that's wanting any kind of an upfront fee, reading fee, you know, anything other than office expenses like printing, copying, and postage, where they will show you the itemized receipts of those things, you don't pay an agent. An agent makes a percentage of what you bring in.
Most artists have one of those. They're called wives. And I am in the market for one. I'm willing to pay with Nookie. Boyfriend said it was okay.
What's the job entail?
filing. For the convention setups, plane tickets.
I'm a personal assistant.
And I think I've got a cot in my office. No, okay. Definitely. Where are you in town? You're local?
No, I'm in New Jersey.
Ah, the commute would kill you.
Online assistants are awesome. They can do great things.
But then how do I get the Nookie?
Well, online does a lot. The internet is really, really great.
I don't need any more cyber or phone sex than I already get.
I've got a friend that, never mind.
Okay. I wanted to ask about self-promotion versus promotion of your works or material. I think at some point, you end up having to promote yourself as much as you're promoting the works that you're doing. And to me, when I have a presence on the internet, that's kind of like the last thing I want to do. But I can see where the role is if you're getting into writing. So I guess if you could talk about the difference between the two and what you're doing in terms of self-promotion.
Well, self-promotion basically is all that I do. I mean, I write the books, and I think I write really good books, and people like them, but through the podcast, because I read all my own work, do all the different character voices, and most of them are quite bad, but I still do all the different...
Could you give us a sample of the female voice?
Cause
no. I have, no, please.
No.
Please.
God, no.
Come on.
No.
I'll show you my porn star voice.
I've already heard it.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah, but you haven't heard mine.
Why buy the cow? You know what I'm saying?
Because the cow comes through with a really great bell.
Okay. I'll do it later. I'm just not doing it in any recorded format. When I'm hiding in my little recording booth, also known as my closet to my apartment, then I can do it.
He's a party pooper.
To me, it's having a marketing background. It's going back to even the Coke analogy. Your brand is the most important thing that you have. You can push a particular work, and that's wonderful, and you have to push the work on its own merits, and it better be the best you can make it, or it's going to flop. But that work has a product life cycle. So if you put out a book like this, product life cycle of a book is 6 to 12 months. It's already been out for 6, it's going into paperback after that, maybe it'll be mass market, they haven't figured that out yet, and then that book is on the back shelf. It's the next book that comes out. People buy from the artist once they get to know that you put out quality work. So part of your time, once you start putting content out and engaging the audience, I believe that in now and in the future, a lot of your time has to go towards you establishing your personal brand. And that doesn't mean being loud and obnoxious and swearing a lot like I do, because that's just who I am.
It works for me.
you know, this is just people tell me, you know, I thought you were such a jerk on your podcast and was all an act, but now I've met you, and that's just really who you are. And that's the key to being to personal branding, is whoever you are, in today's world, you just expose who you are throughout your work. If you're blogging, you're telling people what's going on in your life, you're telling them about your problems, you're telling them about your positive things. If you're podcasting, you're informing them of all these things. Your website needs to have content about you, and it can be as deep or as superficial as you want, but let the audience connect with you and keep them informed of who you are. That way, no matter what you put out, you know, if your next product is the kangaroo's panties, kangaroos wear panties, if they know that artist name, you're going to move most of that audience over with you, and they're going to keep doing it. So for long-term success, got to be paying attention. Your name should be ending with a .com, period, if you can get it. If not, a .net. Get your name registered as a URL immediately. Make that the focal point of all of your work. Even if you have, you know, if you've got like a universe and you've got 17 books in your universe,
yeah,
that's great.
My name is Scott Jones. So.
Yeah, you're bumming. That's why his new nickname is Scott Pimpmaster Jones II. That's what I'm saying. You know,
there you go.
Try and get your name something in whatever you get.
Called.
You're just going to keep on using that, and you make that the focal point of your work. So the key to self-promotion is a website these days. It will always be a website. If you've got an established product line, that's different if people are coming to that. But at least get your name on there and promote yourself as an individual.
There's quite a few other ways. Twitter is extremely helpful because you get to join a community that's established. Most of everybody I know now in podcasting, I met through Twitter, and they're all wonderful. And being on Twitter, everybody who follows you, they know what you're doing. You know, I just put up a post, or I just released a podcast, or you know, whatever. Yes, can I get some rollerblades? And I got them.
Good, I forgot mine.
So Twitter's good. You know, create a Ning group, NING.com. You can create your own little group. Mer has Seventh City. E-zines. Go on to other people's blogs and comment, because you can put a link to what you know, to your website, you know, in a comment. You know, obviously say something intelligent and related to what they're talking
boobies.
About. Don't just...
Yeah. Boobies!
don't just, you know, go... You know, go to my URL, because then you're spamming. But, you know, there's that, and, you know, Facebook, and, you know, all the social media places are good ways. And having a podcast, being able to interview other people, I haven't interviewed you yet, but, I mean, I interviewed T. Morris and some of the other, like, in the podcasting, T. Morris and Philippa Ballantyne and you know, P. G. Holyfield, they come with people.
and they put my interview in their podcast. So now all of them, well, not all of their listeners, but a lot of them now want to know, well, what's tail chasing? Because I interviewed them. I've gotten a chance to interview some, you know, fairly famous authors, Jackie Kessler, Stacey Akane. They're all discovering the internet and putting, you know, blogs up to get their people. And so now all of those people, you know, that actually get their buy their books and are now going to their website, I've just exposed myself to their listenership. So, and just being really, really promoting yourself as a person. And, you know, I used to do it with the chat room. I used to have a chat room, and I used to talk to people. But talking to the people that enjoy your work really makes them stick around.
Yeah, I had a friend who just commented not, you know, 2 hours ago that she said that there was a, she thought that there was a certain writer who she was like, oh, I got to be snarky to them because their writing is just, you know, so terrible. And then they met the person, the writer, and they were like, no, the writer's actually really nice. I guess I can't be as snarky to them as I wanted to be because it's a nice person. Now I have found definitely getting a website, and then being able to link around because it's very much if somebody puts me in their comic strip or I have an interview with somebody, I'll post that up on my website. And then that one guy said he did an interview with me last year, and he was like, man, I got 5,000 hits because you posted on your website for like a week. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got hits, because I did some art for something positive for Christmas. He wanted to take a vacation, so everybody else was doing cartoons for him. And I got 5,000 hits off of him because I gave him some work. But so there's the three things. And I found that this works with a whole lot of different things. I've mentioned it in the previous panel just today. You have to, and you can pick two of the three things, but you can't be one of the three things. You have to be a nice person, and or you have to be on time, and or you have to do good work. And you can be two of them. You can be a nice person and on time, and if your work's okay, you know, not necessarily great, but as long as you're a nice person and it's on time, then you can get away with it. If your work is really good and you're on time, you can be a dick. But if sorry, I didn't mean to. But you were facing me, so
hurt?
I just pointed at you.
Did that hurt?
It stopped hurting being called a dick many years ago.
It's because you're dressed like one. gorgeous. No. He's got.
Yeah,
he's
my
got,
devil's fanny budget just dried up.
No, he's slick. I'm just digging a hole for myself right here. It's the foot mouth disease. I turn red very easily. And I forget what was the other thing that I was going to say about, you know.
Nice person and good writing.
Nice person, yeah. So there's definitely, as far as marketing yourself, at least talking from the comic standpoint of it, the webcomic standpoint, it's a very small industry. And so you can definitely... I was sitting next to a panel with Scott Kurtz, and Scott Kurtz has a reputation for being a horrible person, and I overheard him say he was doing a sketch for somebody, and which I don't have time to do, so he's incredible for doing sketches, and he was saying a friend of his were like, oh yeah, you should do the panda, like fucking him up the ass, and Scott Kurtz was like, no, I can't do that. And he finished the picture of the panda, and his friend said, oh, you should, when my friend comes up to get the picture, you should, like, rip it up or pretend to rip it up, you know, when he shows up, just to be mean. And Scott's like, I can't even play like that, because then you're going to get this huge reputation for being a horrible person. You piss off one person, you say something snarky to one person, and everyone's like, oh, my God, I met this one guy, oh, he was terrible, he was a horrible person. So you can't. And it's frustrating because you get that email that says, you suck, you know, your work sucks. And there's so many times, there's three times that I've written the angry letter back, and then I've deleted it.
Yeah.
And I've grit my teeth, I've walked away, I've ranted with my boyfriend, I've kicked the cat, and then I go back. Gee, I'm sorry you feel this way about it. Thank you for reading the comic strip. Goodbye. And sure enough, you'll get I get the email back going, oh, wow, you read this? Okay, well, I didn't mean that you sucked. I just was in a bad mood. Or you misinterpreted what I meant when I said your stuff sucks, donkey balls. and so, you get a little bit of a reward from not telling them where exactly they can stick their comments.
It's hard for me not to do that. It's really hard. That's part of the personal branding, getting yourself online, is just that. You're going to get people who don't like you just as many or more as people who do like you, and not retaliating is difficult.
I had two different people. I had one person say, gee, I really liked your stuff back when it was cute and wholesome. And then I had another guy say, gee, I really liked your stuff back when it was angry and violent. Both of them referring to the same exact stuff.
I'm going to go ahead and forward you some of the emails I get, and let's compare notes, see the harshness level.
If I could follow up here real quick with emails and feedback from the community, what do you do to deal with copyright issues? Because if you read an email where there's a story suggestion in it, or an element of a story suggestion in it, you get into a copyright issue where somebody could claim, oh, that was my original idea, and here's the documentation to prove it.
I'd have to be one lonely bitch out there doing that, I'll tell you that. I don't think I've really gotten into that. That's people with some serious time on their hands. I do get, you know, I'm getting a lot of people sending me their books saying, can you read this? Or I wrote this, can you read this? And I can't. So I've stopped doing that for that very reason. I'm like, I cannot read your book because for that very reason. What's that?
But you can't read the book because you're lazy.
Yes.
I usually say that.
Actually, I'm just going to go back to being and dressing like a dick, and I will email them and say, no, douche, I can't read your book. Get an agent. No. So, yeah, there's some things. But as far as just the emails or things coming in like that, that is a perception that we all have as we're working our way to some kind of level where we're making revenue off the work. I was very worried about copyright. I was very worried about protecting ideas, etc. Most of the time, none of that is going to come in to play until you start to actually move some product and develop an audience. So I would say, as counterintuitive as it sounds, I wouldn't really worry about it. I really wouldn't worry about it, because as soon as you put something online, that's got a certain level of copyright protection. As soon as you put something in print form and make it available for sale, there's another level of copyright protection right there. So the system actually does protect you quite a bit. The lawyer's still going to get theirs if somebody wants to sue you for it, but...
A threefold thing. I remember the animated Star Trek, they did a follow-up on the Trouble Tribbles, and they allowed documentation about it, but somebody came and talked to the author who wrote the cartoon story before it appeared, about a year before it appeared, and he talked about Trouble Tribbles and how good a story it was, and he came back after it aired and said, you remember our conversation?
Mm-hmm.
We kind of sort of coded in this idea for the follow-up on the animated story.
Well, that sounds like a valid claim to me. If this guy had a conversation, they actually took the content and used it in an episode.
Well, it wasn't that long of a conversation. It's
okay.
Appropriate for the person to actually get to
right.
That person.
And I totally see what you're saying, but again, that goes back to that's Star Trek, and if you are involved in the Star Trek franchise, you'd better make sure you've dotted your I's and crossed your T's, because people are going to, what are they going to do? They're going to try and screw you out of your money. Remember I talked about that before? As soon as you have a brand name, people are coming for it.
There's the guy that did the Da Vinci Code. When he wrote the book, he cited all of his resources. And then as soon as he went to make the movie, all of those resources jumped up and down and said, no, you stole our ideas. You stole our idea, which they didn't care about when it was a book. But as soon as it was the money and there was a couple more commas in the number, then they said, oh, you stole all of our work. So I think it definitely depends on whether or not you're going to get sued. It depends on how much money you make.
Yes. You're going to get sued if you are amazingly successful, period.
Okay. I have time for, say, two more questions.
Tumbleweeds. Oh, one in the back. Two in the back.
How much content would you say you have to have before you start self-publishing?
What form? Cartoon or print?
Both. Material to even put online. How much would you say you should have beforehand?
Oh, put it online, right? You're talking about that mythical thing called a buffer? That's funny. Yeah, I have no buffer. The stuff that's up online right now, they're pencils. I haven't even finished drawing them, and they're up online. But as I know, the conventions are really kicking my ass. I went back and inked some of them. But no, as far as for print, though, you want about a 100-page graphic novel, because printing something up, it's not cost-efficient if it's not in a moderate amount of bulk. So if you're going to do a book, go ahead and do a 100-page book.
As far as fiction goes, I'm coming up with several rules of thumb for this stuff. If you're going to put out a podcast novel, make sure the novel has been edited. Okay, if you're doing the serialized, I'm doing this each week, that's one thing. If you're going to put up a finished book, edit it, record the whole thing. Just record the whole thing, have it in the can, have 4 episodes up on your website before you even start to promote it ever. Because with the audio, people want to come to your site, they want to be able to listen, and after 4 episodes, they're either hooked on the story or they know the story's not for them.
About editing, how well should you edit, graphic novel-wise?
Editing, like, spelling?
Like, spelling, grammatical errors.
Online, When I post the stuff online, it's 3:00 in the morning, and I don't care anymore. And on one hand, people say it does add some human element when you see mistakes. But if you're going to go to print, you get an editor. I've got my rant online about my learning disability and my inability to I spell phonetically, and so I for my print though. I get an editor. If it's online and the people are like, oh my God, I can't believe you can't spell, and I read all 2,000 of those free comics, and I'm so offended that you can't spell, I'm like, gee, teasing the retarded kid about that free comic that you really enjoyed, that's classy. But yeah, edit. If it's going into print, get an editor. Have your roommates do it, have your friends do it, have your mom do it, just edit.
Find
it
someone who doesn't like you and get them to do it. That's a real good rule of thumb. Because people who like you will often not tell you what they actually think. Wait, people who like you.
That brings up a good question for me. I asked somebody to edit something once, and when they sent it back, I didn't recognize it anymore. And I got so upset, I started crying.
You have to remember
what's
that.
The line? Yeah.
You have to remember that when you give it to somebody, if oftentimes when people critique, they're critiquing what they would have written. And so you have to find a good critique partner, which is not easy. Somebody who can be objective and go, basically, I want to do a podcast on this for Tale Chasing. You need someone to ask questions. You need the author wants to know, do you understand what my world is like? Do you know what my character's like? Can you tell me what did I learn? What did you learn about my character? Not necessarily, you know, what they would think. You need to know what you actually got across. So finding a good critique partner is very difficult because often they're telling you what they would have written.
Yeah, an editor was a horror writer, and I write sci-fi, and I realized that might have been a mistake at the time.
Well, you got to find. There's two things you got to do. Number one, you do have to find the right person who can get it back to you. Remember that just because they made an edit doesn't mean you have to agree with it. Mm-hmm. The real purpose of editing is to get you to catch continuity mistakes, character mistakes, things that you've screwed up. Grammatical mistakes are fine, but it gets you to look at it in a different way, and you start to ask yourself questions, okay? And then the second biggest, the biggest thing you can do for yourself is you finish that book, and you put it away for 6 months, and you don't even look at it. Enough time to go by to forget what you thought you were saying, and then you pull it out and you read it, and now you see what you actually put down on the paper. And if you thought that guy was hard on your manuscript, wait till you edit your own after you forget what you thought you were saying and you see what a regular reader would see. Do that. Well, yeah. I mean, that's just it. You do that 2 or 3 times and you've learned more than any writing class in the world will ever teach you, because you now know, you know why you suck and you can fix it.
Okay. All right. One more.
I read online recently about self-publishing and the view that you may get from agents. They say that some agents is looking for new material. If you tell them you're self-publishing.
I'm sorry, I'm taking over here, but I deal with that one too. If you have an agent who says he's not interested in you because you self-publish something, skip him. he or she is a dinosaur and they will be out of business in 5 years. This is just the way things are going. I mean, this book right here is kind of the success story. I gave it away twice. You can still go get the whole thing online for free. And it still sold, you know, it still sold 4,000 copies in the first week. And I mean, it's like it doesn't matter if you give it away anymore. So anybody who's worried about you giving it away, you have to weigh that against, do you want to listen to them and play the traditional game, which won't be around all that much longer anyways, and go through the different hoops, or do you want to, you know, give them the finger and say, I'm going to go straight to the audience and I'll let the marketplace decide whether I have talent and I can tell stories or I can draw pictures. Pardon my French, but fuck them. They have controlled everything for the past 100 years, and a lot of the reason that we have so much crap content on TV and in the bookstores and the magazine is you've got people who can't create who are deciding what a good creation is. The real people are over here. It's the audience. And thanks to the internet, you have access to billions of people who can look at your stuff and decide for themselves if they like you. Now, out of that billion, you need the tiniest, tiniest, tiniest fraction to fall in love with what you do in order to develop a real strong brand name. And then when you go back to the agent, you go, you know, I've got X, X, and X. You sign me or forget it. You know? So I wouldn't worry about it. My agent told me not to podcast this. He's not my agent anymore.
It's a digital age, and we need that. But the flip side to that is that readers also want to have something they can touch and put on a shelf. And so even if you gave it away, that's great. I've downloaded a couple of PDFs, and I love them, and they're great. But it's not the same as a book in my hand. It's not you can. How many people are going to take a PDF to have Scott sign it? They're going to want a book. Please sign my book.
And another thing to keep in mind, the math of everything, you give away a PDF, 50,000 copies are downloaded, okay? Out of that, if you're lucky, you get 10% who even like you, okay? So now you've got 5,000 people who actually like the book. A certain percentage of them will buy the book, and you'll generate X amount of revenue from moving that many units. But the thing to keep in mind is every one of those people knows 10 to 20 to 30 people who do not like to read books on the screen, and who are not going to learn how to get a podcast or an RSS or a blog aggregation. They're not going to be bothered. You have to remember the exponential value of the people who download your work and the social circles that they immerse themselves in, which is one of the things that the agents who say, well, you gave it away, you can't sell it, they have no friggin' idea what they're talking about. What you've done is you've paid nothing to get 50,000 free advertisements out there talking about your book at the bars, talking about them in class. God forbid your content happens to be about high school vampires from a female perspective and they go talk about it in class. I mean, that's what's hot right now. All I'm saying is you get people talking about your book, and that will never, ever happen again unless you get a publisher who decides to spend $1 million to promote you and make you a household name. And $1 million does not go that far anymore.
Yeah, I never would have gotten published if I wasn't already online, I wasn't already printed. Actually, one of the women working at Silent Devil went up to them and said, we need her. You know, the guys hadn't ever read any of my stuff. They didn't ever hear of me, but they saw me at a convention, and they saw the business that I was doing, and they saw the readers, and they saw the sales, and they said, oh, there, we don't know what this target audience is. We have no idea. She has no place. I'm not Marvel. I'm not DC. I'm not alternative. I'm not doing comics about spandex. I'm not doing, my readers are not, you know, 16-year-old girls. They're not 14-year-old boys. They're everybody. They're Germans and Australians and 16-year-old girls with green hair and bikers and housewives, and there is no target audience. And they didn't, you know, most publishers and editors, they were like, well, we don't know what her target audience is, but she's selling a lot of books. So they're out there somewhere.
That's what the internet does for you. It's, if you've ever gone on eBay and looked at some of the garbage that is for sale on eBay, and then you look at this person's ranking and they're like 18,000 positive comments. You're like, how did they sell 18,000 units of that crap? Because what's crap to you is the most treasured thing in the world to someone else. And when you factor that over a billion people, again, you get into these really, really small percentages. People are going to hate your work. And they're going to think you're a hack, and they're going to think you have no talent. Other people are not. If you can get one person out of 1,000, one person out of 100, one person out of 1,000 to look at your stuff and become a fan, you're going to get a following very quickly, really, quite frankly, no matter what you create. There's somebody out there who's going to like it.
Scott, I hate to do this, but I'm in a panel like in 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, we need to wrap up.
So,
all right,
thank
well,
you and
thanks,
good night.
Everybody.
Yes.
And if you guys want to see personal branding / whoring to its ultimate level, you want to go to scottsigler.com and see all of the different stuff that you can do to engage your audience.